She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Hi, I'm Rob West. Sunday is Mother's Day, and I'm really looking forward to it. That passage from Proverbs 31 describes some of the ways moms faithfully support and serve their families. So we'll brag on moms a bit today, and then we'll take your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Okay, so most of the time when we think about the value of moms, it's about things you just can't put a price on, like love, tenderness, guidance, and wisdom that moms naturally pour out for their families. But what if we did put a monetary value on what a typical mother does for her family, day in and day out? What would her paycheck look like if that were a, quote, paying job? Well, we checked out the latest data from Survey.com to find out what mothers are doing in terms of a workload. The survey calculates how much a mother's efforts would be worth in salary, given all the hats she wears during the week. Apparently, working moms are putting in an average of 54 hours a week on the home front, just keeping things humming, in addition to their outside jobs. Other moms choose to stay home with their children, either working from home or homeschooling or being full-time moms. According to the Salary.com survey, the average stay-at-home mom is working up to 15 hours a day, 7 days a week. Her duties often include chief financial officer, media administrator, educator, cook, babysitter, driver, psychologist, loan officer, interior designer, hazmat contractor, nurse, laundry expert, event planner, and sometimes referee. I know, it's a great list. For all that, the annual base salary of your typical mom should be, are you ready for this? $185,000, given all the jobs she does on a regular basis. Now, that does not include pay premiums that companies may offer to retain excellent employees, such as bonuses, overtime, and hazard pay. Factor in those perks, and your average stay-at-home mom could earn more than $200,000 a year, and I think we can all agree they're worth every penny. Still, some folks have asked why God included honor your father and mother in the Ten Commandments. It goes without saying that this is a very good thing to do and that it's natural to love, respect, and honor one's mother and father. But does the Fifth Commandment really carry the same weight as the other nine? Is it as important as not taking the Lord's name in vain, or stealing, or even murdering someone? Well, apparently it is to God. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in the Ten Commandments. So we should probably ask ourselves why. Theologians have come up with a number of reasons, and it's good to consider these when we head into Mother's Day on Sunday. The first reason is because of life itself. God is the author of life. Genesis 1:27 reads, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." Life is precious to God, and mothers and fathers are the instruments God uses to bring new life into the world. Mothers, of course, bear most of that burden in childbirth. In Psalm 139, we read, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb." We are to honor our mothers and fathers because they gave us life. Another reason for the Fifth Commandment is relationship. God puts a high value on them. He wants a relationship with each and every one of us. He created the family and wants us to enjoy the relationships that only a family can provide. The full text of the Fifth Commandment, Exodus 20, verse 12, recognizes that unless children have good relations with their parents, rightly honoring them, the family can't prosper as it should. It reads, "Honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you." Now, what exactly does it mean to honor mothers and fathers? Here's a clue. It's more than sending a card on Mother's Day. The term honor means to hold in high respect or treat with significance. To do that, children must obey their parents and care for them. The only exception being if a parent asks for something that goes against God's word. Obviously, we must obey God first. To honor their parents, children must carry their name into the world in a principled and righteous way, not bringing shame or reproach on the family. So, as we honor moms this weekend. Remember that we can never put a value on what they've done and continue to do for us because it's priceless. We should really make it Mother's Day all year long. All right, your calls are next, 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West, and this is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Prayer is hard, but prayer is also easy. And the more time that passes in your Christian life, the more likely you are to know this is true for yourself. Finding time to pray, that can be a challenge. And it's so easy to find yourself praying the same things over and over. Even the disciples of Jesus asked him to teach them to pray. And what he gave to them is still worth following. It's in Matthew 6, verse 9. It starts with these words, "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name." Yes, we have requests to bring before God. That's not bad. But Jesus shows us to begin our prayers thinking not of ourselves, but about the Father, and to be reminded that He is holy. Grow in your walk with Christ with Anchor Devotional. Visit getanchor.com.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
The Middle East, that's one part of the world we need to pay attention to, especially the country of Israel. Each week, I'll help you make sense of what's happening in that region through a biblical lens. I'll bring you important information about security threats, archaeological discoveries, biblical prophecy, ministries happening on the ground, and much more. I'm John Riley. Join me for the Middle East Report Special Edition every Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio as I connect you to the people, places, and geography of what we read in God's Word.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
I'm so thankful you're joining us today on Faith and Finance and Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions now for the rest of the program today on anything financial. The number to call, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. We've got lines open. You can call right now. Coming up a little later in our broadcast today, Jerry Boyer stops by. Jerry is our resident economist. He joins us on Fridays during our final segment of the broadcast to update us on the economy, but also an update on his work in the area of corporate engagement. Today, an update from a meeting that he participated in, an annual meeting of the company Verizon. Actually, he was joined in that meeting by Walker Wildman of the American Family Association. Jerry will give us an update on all that transpired by Walker's visit to that Verizon annual meeting. That's coming up a bit later in the broadcast. But first, let's dive into your phone calls today. Again, lines are open. You can call right now. Anything financial is in play. 800-525-7000. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Terry, you'll be our first caller. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Rob. I am calling on behalf of a situation that I know concerning. What is the statute of limitations for a collection agency to collect monies?
Yeah, it's a good question, Terry. There are statutes of limitations for debt collection, but depending on the state that you live in and the type of debt, they can vary substantially. So most of these statutes of limitations will range from 3 to 10 years, but some can be longer, such as with federal student loans. You'll need to determine which statute applies to your particular debt. If a statute of limitations expires, the debt is considered time barred, and that's a term, and you can't be sued to collect it. However, a collection agency can continue to contact you regarding the debt with certain legal restrictions. For instance, they can't call you at work if you tell them not to. In most cases, they can only call you between 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. There's actually a complete list of restrictions that you can read up on at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, their website at cfpb.gov. You'll just want to look for the collection restrictions. But really, you know, what I would say is if the debt is legitimate, then you need to work to get on a payment plan with that collection agency. Let them know how much you can pay back each month and be prepared to share your budget with them. But to your question, there are statutes of limitations, but they vary pretty widely based on your situation.
Is that helpful? It was for a person's credit card.
Okay. Yeah. So it really is going to come down to the state that you're in. What is this somebody is, it's not you, it's someone else. Is that right?
Well, you know, people, I don't want to go that direction.
Okay. No worries. So here's the bottom line. I mean, I realize there's probably a lot of pieces and parts to this in terms of how it came to be and what your relationship is to it. I would say if it's a legitimate debt, I'd try to get on a payment plan to get this paid back. Obviously, that's going to help to repair your credit. But to the question about statutes of limitations, yes, there are statutes of limitations. They do vary pretty widely, so you'd have to explore that a bit more depending upon your state. But hopefully that's helpful to you, Terry. If we can assist you further along the way, don't hesitate to reach out. Lines are open today, 800-525-7000. Your calls on anything financial. We'd love to hear from you. Don't hesitate to call right now. Our team is standing by. In the news today, the Biden administration is looking into ways to further restrict donor-advised funds. So you've heard me talk about donor-advised funds pretty regularly. It's one of my favorite charitable giving vehicles, if you will. It's a tax-advantaged method for people to make charitable donations. Think about it like a charitable checking account where you can deposit not only cash, but assets, property, appreciated stock, just about anything. It can then be sold and held in the donor advised fund until you decide to grant it out by making recommendations on where it goes to the donor advised fund sponsor. Now, critics of donor advised funds, including the Biden administration, say it's a way for the ultra wealthy to take immediate tax deductions while allowing the money to sit unused indefinitely. Citing those complaints, the administration is exploring ways to punish donors who, by the administration's definition, are abusing the funds. One proposal is to impose a 20% excise tax, surprise, surprise, on donations that, quote, significantly benefit a donor, which was really the whole purpose of the law establishing donor advised fund policies back in 2006. More than 70 people representing the charitable sector showed up at an IRS meeting this week to argue against the proposed restrictions for good reason. Some testified that the changes would significantly reduce the contributions to nonprofits. And while donor advised fund critics maybe insist that the system needs to be overhauled to reduce so-called abuse by the ultra wealthy, almost half of donor advised funds contain less than $50,000. Now, interestingly, one proposed restriction not discussed at the hearing but wanted by DAF critics is putting a hard deadline for distributing money held in these accounts. And since deadlines were not imposed in the law setting up donor advised funds in the first place, the IRS is going to have to get congressional approval to implement them. So there's some good news in this, and that is this can't be done haphazardly. Now, What I would say is, for those of you who have not considered using a donor advised fund in the past, I would check out this wonderful tool. I'll tell you, setting them up is easy. And especially if you want to do something like sell an asset, give an asset prior to it being sold, like if you have appreciated stock or you have some real estate, you're looking to give it away. Very simple. Rather than setting up a foundation or anything that's very costly and labor intensive, setting up a donor advised fund can take you less than 5 minutes over the internet at ncfgiving.com. That's the National Christian Foundation. And then you can give the assets to your donor advised fund prior to selling them. You could even give a portion of the asset. So maybe you want to take 20% of a piece of real estate and carve it off on paper, if you will, and give it to your donor advised fund prior to the sale. Well, the portion that's given away before it's sold is no longer subject to capital gains tax, which allows you to get more money into the hands of the charity, ministry, or your church upon the gift. So a really powerful tool, donor advised funds that you ought to check out. There's also a strategy called bunching that a lot of folks use related to donor advised funds as well. So think, most often 80 to 90% of taxpayers use the standard deduction. And so they're not able to itemize because they don't get above that threshold with their charitable contributions. Well, if you have the cash available, bunching allows you to make a larger gift, perhaps several years worth of contributions in one tax year, get above the standard deduction, so thereby getting a bigger charitable deduction, and then you can kind of give it out over your regular schedule. So maybe you give it out over the next 36 months, but because it's all put in your donor advised fund in one tax year, you get to itemize and take the full benefit of the entire charitable contribution. Now, it requires that you have that money available, so that's not for everybody, but it's just one strategy where I think the donor advised fund really shines. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll dive back into your questions. We've got lines open, 800-525-7000. You can call right now. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Hey, man, what are you doing?
I'm just lying here relaxing in a stream. I call it streaming.
Okay, that word already has another meaning, right?
AFA Streaming offers free and subscription video content. Titles like By Design, The God Who Speaks, and Asbury Revival, Desperate for More. You'll also find video versions of AFR programs. Visit afa.net and click on Streaming.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
Zillow Home Loans has once again crossed the line of appropriate ads. Their latest commercial features two men sitting on the sofa with one man giving a handmade gift to his partner as they are saving money for their future home purchase. And it's airing during family viewing time. This is further normalizing of sin and the LGBTQ agenda. So 1 million moms must speak out. If you agree with us, please sign our petition at 1millionmoms.com. Share it with your friends and family at 1millionmoms.com.
Frustrated by your health insurance? Confused by the network restrictions and increasing premiums? There's a better way. Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM is a Christian community delivering a faith-based solution to the high cost of healthcare. Take back control of your healthcare with the ability to choose a provider you trust with no network restrictions and savings of up to 40%. Learn more and enroll today at chministries.org/faithfi. That's chministries.org/faithfi.
Director of the AFA Foundation, Riley Wildman.
The most rewarding thing about my job is that we get to build relationships through our donors and our supporters and get to have that personal relationship with them.
Contact the AFA Foundation today to learn how you can shore up permanent income for your retirement years while supporting the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. Call 800
326-4543, extension 345.
We are grateful for support from the Eventide Center for Faith and Investing. ECFI is an educational initiative of Eventide Asset Management that seeks to help Christians understand and practice biblically faithful investing. They do this through their podcast and online journal featuring articles from industry thought leaders and their course called Discover God's Story for Investing. More information is available at faithandinvesting.com. That's faithandinvesting.com.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. We're so glad you're along with us today as we help you make God your ultimate treasure and money a tool to accomplish God's purposes. Luke 12:21 says this, "So it is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." What does that mean? You know, if God is our treasure, our life will reflect God's character to the world. As image bearers of a relational and generous God, one beautiful and tangible way we exhibit our love for God is through our financial decisions. You see, in Matthew 5:14, we're called to be the light to the world. And as such, our finances can be a powerful testimony of our faith in Jesus. You see, the way we earn money and our lifestyle and our generosity and our financial priorities and our perspective of money and possessions, well, it becomes a reflection of who we are in Christ. When our abundance is found in the person of Jesus, we become open-handed with our finances as we seek His kingdom and His righteousness. Generosity is no longer something we do out of obligation or to be seen by others, but it becomes something that flows out of a grateful heart that treasures God and longs to see others come to know and love Him. I'd love for you to think about this passage today, this idea in Luke 12:21, the second half, of being rich toward God. What does that look like? I think it means to treasure God above everything and to handle our money accordingly. And I think that's a good reminder and perhaps a convicting thought as we go through our day today that might help you think about how you handle God's money over the course of the day. All right, let's head to the phones. We're going to take your calls and questions today, 800-525-7000. Let's go to North Carolina. Hi, Adrian. How can I help?
Oh, hey, Rob. How you doing?
Doing great.
Well, I have two debts here that I'm trying to see which one to tackle first. And one is obviously just my own mortgage, which I have about 5% interest. And the other one is a small business loan I obtained a couple of years ago at a lower interest at 3.5%. But that loan is just kind of bothering me. And but I don't know if it makes sense to put all my, I have some extra money now that I come every extra income. And I'm trying to see where to put that money. If I should put it towards that SBA loan or just go ahead and try to pay the home off.
Yeah, good question. I love the idea that as you have this surplus, you're really thinking about the best way to get this debt paid off once and for all. I heard you say that the SBA loan is 3.5%. What did you say the mortgage is, the interest rate?
It's about 5.5%.
Okay. And the mortgage is on your primary residence, is that right?
It is my primary residence.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. And then that small business loan, is your small business covering the debt service on that plus everything else you need, and including, you know, continuing to pay yourself a regular salary?
Well, actually, no. This small business loan was a few years back, and my business went down during the COVID.
Got
so
it.
I ended up carrying this loan on my, I'm just paying it off from my, I don't have the business any longer.
Okay, got it. Yeah, but the income that you have, obviously, you know, you're living within your means and you have even some surplus here. So, you know, you're easily covering the debt service on both of these loans every month. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Okay. All right. And have you, what have you built up in the way of savings at this point?
Well, in savings, in liquid funds, I probably have around 40,000 in savings.
Okay.
401k.
Got it.
Well.
And what do you have surplus each month that you're looking to put toward these debts?
I have probably close to 2,000 extra a month.
Okay, got it. And is that a new thing, or have you had that for some time?
I've had it probably about, I'd say about 2 years now.
Okay. All right. And then what are your total monthly expenses, roughly, including the debt service?
Including the debt service, I'm probably around $7,000 a month, including everything.
Okay, got it. So you're right about 6 months' worth of expenses and emergency savings. That's great. And then what are the balances, last question, on the two loans, the balance on the mortgage and the balance on the SBA loan?
Okay, the mortgage I just got about a year ago, so I'm right around $220,000 on the home.
All right.
And the SBA is around $70,000 is the SBA loan.
Okay, got it. All right. Yeah, and so I can see what you're saying here. I mean, obviously, on paper, you're going to save more money in interest over the long haul by paying down this mortgage. And so if you were to prioritize putting an extra $2,000 a month, assuming you're saving at the appropriate level in your retirement plan, I'd recommend you put 10 to 15% in there. But you've got a fully funded emergency fund, and let's say you are, you know, on track for retirement and saving such that you're going to have what you need to maintain your lifestyle in retirement. I think the next priority is, unless there's some short-term need that you have where you're going to have to replace an automobile or something like that that you want to be saving for, I love the idea that you'd pay off these debts. You know, you are going to save more in the long run with the mortgage just because, number one, the way that interest is calculated, but also, number two, it's just a higher interest rate. And so, you know, that's just going to make more sense on paper. Now, the benefit of getting rid of the SBA loan is obviously it's going to happen quicker. And so if you're putting $24,000 a year, you know, toward your SBA loan, you know, you're going to have that paid off in 3 years. And then you could take, you know, that mortgage or that SBA loan payment and roll all of that toward the home loan. And, you know, that just, it's kind of snowballing it in a sense. And that might give you the motivation to stay after it because now, you know, in less than 3 years, you've eliminated one of your debts, which obviously that's not going to happen in that time frame with the mortgage. So if that, you know, is going to give you the motivation to keep going and get this done and stay with it because you know you're heading toward eradicating one of these debts, then I'd say go for it. If you're just purely looking for what's the best economic return, then it's going to be the mortgage. Does that make sense? Oh, I think
I'll
lost you. There you are. You're going to go with the SBA. All right. I think that's a good choice. You know, the data says the plan that's the best for you is the one that you're going to stick with. And I hear a little bit more energy in your voice around that. And the fact that you'll get it done much sooner, I think, is a good idea. God bless you, Adrian. We'll be right back. Did you know the average person walks nearly 2,000 miles a year? Now think about the millions of children around the world who risk disease and miss out on opportunities simply because they walk those 2,000 miles without a decent pair of shoes. Around the world, Buckner Shoes for Orphan Souls provides access to health, education, hope, and opportunity through the gift of shoes. Visit giveshoestoday.org and find out how you can provide shoes for a child right now.
The world around us is constantly challenging the way we think. That's why we need a constant source of information that's based on the unchanging Word of God. I'm Jeff Shambley, and I invite you to join me for The Stand Radio, a weekly program that highlights the latest trends in culture, faith, and family. You'll hear insightful interviews with a biblical worldview application. The Stand Radio, Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
Are you searching for a way to become a better, faithful steward of the resources that God has given you? Well, download the FaithFi app and join the 37,000 others who are already using our app. The FaithFi app will provide you with wisdom, community, and simply help you stay on track with your finances. We have 3 money management options to choose from, so find an option that fits your unique needs. It's available on desktop or mobile, Simply go to faithfi.com and click app to get started.
The Bachelor of Arts in Christian Ministry at Wesley Biblical Seminary is the perfect opportunity to prepare for God's calling on your life. It's easy to make excuses why you can't pursue what God has called you to do, but this program removes those barriers. Flexible class options, an affordable cost, and highly trusted professors. WBS is the school for you, and now is the time to take a next step and prepare for God's calling on your life. Learn more at wbs.edu. That's wbs.edu.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance Program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. soundmindinvesting.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio, where we help you apply biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. We've got lines open today. We're taking your calls and questions, 800-525-7000. You can call right now. You'll get right through, 800-525-7000. Let's go back to the phones to Indiana. Hi, Julie. How can I help?
Yes, thank you for your program, and thank you for your advice that you can give. My children, when they were about 8 and 9 years old, the neighbor lady died and left her small farm and her house to the children. It's titled in their name. It has been for, they're in their 40s. Well, she left their father like a proprietorship, I think you call it. I don't know. But they didn't get any control over it until just recently where he passed away. So now they're trying to figure out, do they have to pay capital gains? Do they have to pay inheritance tax? I mean, their name's been on the property for years, but we're just kind of... Wanting to know where to go from here.
Yeah. So essentially the way this would work, Julie, is that the, if there was any taxes owed by the estate, when was this? When did she pass away?
Early '90s.
And the taxes were paid back then. Yeah. Okay. So her estate would have paid any estate taxes. There wouldn't have been any capital gains taxes unless the property was sold, which obviously it wasn't. So all of that with regard to the estate tax would have been taken care of back then. So your kids' cost basis from the inheritance is the market value of that small farm as of the date of her death back in the early 90s. And they're going to have capital gains on all of the gain between her, the market value as of the date of death and what they sell it for today or whenever they sell it. And the difference between those two, the selling price minus the cost basis, minus any improvements that they made, not maintenance, but improvements, would be the gain that would be taxable. And that would be a long-term capital gain. And that would either be at 0, 15%, or 20% of the gain based on their income. So what determines whether you're at 0, 15, or 20% for the capital gains tax is your taxable income for the year in which it was sold. And that would be for each of your children based on, you know, the percentage of their ownership.
Oh, okay. So, as, and you said it was 15 to 20% of the gain part.
Yeah, it's, you know, going to come down to, yes, 15 to 20% of the gain, or it could be zero. It really depends upon what their taxable income is. So are they all single or are they married?
No, they're married.
Okay. And so for if you're married filing jointly, just for example, for 2024, if your capital gains rate is 0% until you get above $94,000 in taxable income. So, and so if their income is between $94,051 and $583,000, then they'd be at the 15% capital gain rate. Below $94,000 in taxable income, they'd be at zero. So it'd probably be one of the two.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. We appreciate your call today. Absolutely. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. By the way, coming up in the next segment, Jerry Boyer stops by. We'll get a quick update on the economy from Jerry. Find out what he's watching this week as the Dow Jones pushes for an 8-day winning streak. That's on the heels of the less than desirable labor and unemployment report last week. We also see consumer sentiment tumbling. That's, of course, encouraging for the market in this upside-down world because they're now hoping for and expecting a rate cut sooner than later. We'll get Jerry's take on that. He'll also update us on his participation along with Walker Wildman from the American Family Association in the shareholder meeting, the annual meeting of Verizon. Walker was there and had a chance to present, and Jerry will update us about that engagement. And we're taking your phone calls as well today. That number to call is 800-525-7000. Again, that's 800-525-7000. Let's go to Missouri. Hi, Brad. How can I help?
Yes, sir. I'm a truck driver, and for the first couple of years, I was doing LTL, and I was getting paid by the hour, the $30 an hour. I was bringing home $1,500, $1,000 a week, and now I'm over the road as a self-employment. I'm on a 1099. I haven't done my first quarter yet on my taxes. I'm keeping all my receipts, but my question is, am I digging myself a hole, or do you perceive that this could be a benefit to me?
Yeah, I mean, it can really go either way. And there are some benefits. The upside is you have the possibility as an independent contractor of getting a lot more deductions by being self-employed because you have the ability to claim, you know, your expenses against your income. The downside is you have to pay both ends of the FICA taxes, so that the half of your FICA taxes that would normally be paid around 7% by your employer, if you're a W-2 employee, you have to cover. So, you know, that's one downside. Now, the flip side of that is, from a tax standpoint, is one of the upsides is you could pay yourself, you know, a salary and then take distributions for a part of the profits. And you'd have to work with the CPA to figure out how much is salary, how much is distributions. But by separating those, you'd have to pay both sides of the FICA on the salary, but not necessarily on the distribution. So there are some ways to structure that. I would say, just kind of at a minimum, you probably need to be taking about 30% of your income and keeping it separate, and then making quarterly estimated payments, you know, in order to make sure that you don't have a big tax liability at the end of the year that you're paying penalties and interest on. But again, you know, it can go both ways. I think you just need to be really intentional about keeping receipts, probably getting a CPA to help you think through all the deductions you can take advantage of. And as long as you're on top of it, I think this can be a good thing. You know, the biggest downside is what I mentioned about the FICA taxes.
Right. I talked to some H&R Block people, and they emphasize keep track of your miles. Because, see, I don't get paid for detention time, but I'm writing it down. So I didn't know if I could file that as a deduction or not, because some of these places I go to, I might set an hour, I might set 5 hours. So I'm writing that time down to see where I stand as far as getting reimbursed for that.
Yeah, and so you're talking about getting reimbursed for the time that you're stationary?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that. I'm not a CPA, so that would be a good question. I think, you know, you're only, in terms of your mileage expense, it's only going to be for those miles driven, unless there's some element I'm not aware of there. But this is a good time, especially as you're making this transition, for you to have a CPA. Even if in the future you do it yourself, you just want to make sure you're taking full advantage of everything that's available to you. So I like the way you're thinking, but getting some professional assistance on this, I think, will go a long way.
One other question: if I owe a portion of taxes on my first quarter, do they do the deductions? You know, food, showers. Is the deductions done first, and I'll pay the remainder, or?
Yes.
Or how does that work?
So you need to try. I mean, if you can, you would estimate how much You know, what portion of your income for that quarter is actually going to be taxable to you after the expenses that you're taking against it. Yes. Yeah, so that would be the portion, because what you're trying to do is figure out, okay, at the end of the year, how much total income am I going to have? And that's after expenses, and that's what you're paying tax on. And then you're just paying that early, you know, each quarter. Hey, God bless you, Brad. Thanks for calling today. All the best. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Every weekday, strengthen your family and your faith with Family Talk.
I had the same brain when I was at the bottom of the class that I had at the top of the class. Exactly the same brain, but a different attitude. What does that tell us about our responsibility to develop the intellect of the people and our spheres of influence?
Don't miss Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson every weekday at 6:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. Central on AFR.
On the next Focus on the Family, Kirsten Watson offers encouragement for moms who are in the trenches. As a mom of seven and wife of NFL veteran Ben Watson, Kirsten will remind you to embrace your identity in Christ and trust God through the everydayness of motherhood. Next time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Are you looking for a financial professional who aligns with your biblical values? Certified Kingdom Advisors are trusted financial, legal, or accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure they provide biblically wise financial advice as part of their practice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to faithfi.com and clicking Find a CKA.
We are grateful for support from Timothy Plan. Are you unsure if your investments align with your values? Well, for nearly three decades, the goal of the Timothy Plan has been to guide clients on a biblically responsible journey with its mutual funds and ETFs. More information is available at timothyplan.com. Investing includes risk, including possible loss of principal. Before investing, carefully consider funds, investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Read carefully before investing. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foresight Fund Services LLC.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Well, here on a Friday, in our final segment, our good friend Jerry Boyer joins us. Jerry is president of Boyer Research. He's our resident economist. He's also a frequent contributor and columnist at World News Group. You can learn more at WNG.org. And Jerry, great to have you. I know you've been really busy. It's annual meeting season. We're going to get an update here in a moment about an annual meeting you and Walker Wildman were a part of here recently. But first, the economy, as you well know, well, it's the same old story. It sounds like, I mean, you know, we've got both jobs weakening as well as, you know, with jobless claims last week hitting their highest level since August 2023. We've had, you know, that GDP report that you and I talked about. We've also got consumer sentiment, you know, trailing down just as folks continue to see inflation not responding to the Fed's work. And yet the Dow Jones is going to post potentially its eighth day of gains on the heels of all of that. Right. So I guess that's just the same old story, huh?
It is. I mean, I feel like it's a little boring, but it's not boring to actually, you know, understand things, right? And the way you understand things is you see the patterns that recur over and over again. And the pattern that recurs over and over again, largely since the Great Recession, when the central bank started to become the largest investor in the known universe, the Thanos of investors. It just got gigantic and powerful and owns more assets than anybody else, our central bank does, is that when there's bad economic news, markets do well. Because when there's bad economic news, investors know that the Fed thinks it's its job to print money to stimulate us out of the bad economic news. Now, that doesn't actually help, but the Fed thinks it helps, and it's the Fed's mandate. Well, it's actually one of two conflicting mandates. So whenever there's bad economic news, markets say, okay, they're going to switch to the mandate where they have to create new money to stimulate the economy. But the thing is, that new money, when the Fed creates new money, does your bank account go up? Mine doesn't. right? Nothing changes in my bank account. What changes is in the reserve account of the banks themselves. The money goes out into the markets. The Fed goes out there and buys financial instruments. So when they pump new money into the system, they don't pump it directly into us. You know, they don't, you know, they don't give you a coupon or something to go down to the Dollar General and buy something. What they do is they go out into the financial markets and buy things. And investors know that, which means when there's bad economic news, investors say, okay, the Fed's going to be a buyer, so we're going to be buyers first, because the Fed's going to be pumping money into the system. And that's how we get these highs when it already had arguably bubble valuations and a weakening economy, weakening dollar, high gold, high cryptocurrencies. All of these things are saying the economy is not good, and yet markets are high. That means markets are not high based on the fundamental valuation. They're high based on the expectation of continuing easy money from the Fed.
Yeah, because it sounds like that's all that we're looking for at the end of the day, at least those who are buying and selling stocks and bonds. All right, Jerry, well, we'll continue to watch that for sure. I know you've been spending a lot of time in this busy earnings season, participating in annual meetings, doing some great work, and you have a report from actually this week. Share that with us.
Yeah, well, it's really American Family Association, Walker Wildman, who did a proposal. We helped with the paperwork. That's kind of where the paperwork people, where he had a proposal on the ballot, which said to Verizon, you have a history of canceling services on what appears to be politically biased basis. You know, they canceled One American News Network. They suspended the Trump campaign and did some similar things. Walker, you know, AFA put that forward. Walker's the spokesman. And we had meetings with Verizon, and they said, no, well, it wasn't for political reasons. Believe us. You know, we promise. It might look politically biased. I mean, it does, but it's not politically biased. And we asked, well, can you think of any liberal groups that got canceled? And they couldn't. Only the conservative groups. So, you know, Walker's point of view was, well, you know, we all like to trust one another, but, you know, how do we know to trust you? We would only know to trust you if your terms of service were not vague and they were specific. Well, like almost every other tech company in the world, and this is a tech and communications company, right? It's phones, but it's also cable, et cetera, is if their terms of service don't have vague statements like we don't want to promote hate or we don't want to promote intolerance. Because you and I know that everybody calls everybody else's speech hate speech. You know, liberals call conservative speech hate speech, and conservatives call liberal speech hate speech. So being able to call something hate speech, all that means is that somebody doesn't like you. It doesn't mean that it's actually hate speech. And a lot of stuff that comes out of the Bible, people seem to think is hate speech. So that's too vague. Companies can't give themselves permission to ban based on things like that. They have to have very specific terms of service, and Walker presented the argument for that. That's interesting. Look, this number may not dazzle. Okay, it got 4.7% support. Now, shareholder proposals never win. Conservative or groups, you know, proposals from conservative groups definitely never win. When we've done proposals in the past, they've tended to be in the 1.5 to 2% support level. 4.7% is the highest support level I've ever seen for one of these debanking or deplatforming proposals. Now, again, we're not going to call a great, we're not going to call 4.7% a great victory, but up from 2%, that's progress. We're just beginning to get a ground. We're on the field finally. Now we're starting to build the ground game.
That's great, Jerry. That's a great update and really meaningful progress, I think, to your point. What about the roadmap from here? What are you seeing on the horizon?
Well, there's a lot going on. There's something coming up with Intel. Intel endorsed abortion when the Dobbs decision came down. If Walker has a really great question, if you're an Intel shareholder, you're going to be able to go hear that when he gives his speech, which is, you know what most companies said about abortion when Roe versus Wade was overturned? Answer, absolutely nothing. Because companies don't have to say anything about this stuff. That's a good example for these big companies that fell all over themselves to say, well, it's a choice between a woman and her doctor, and it's a personal decision, except That's really the question at issue, isn't it? Is there another person there? Right. So when you say it's just a personal decision for the woman or personal decision for the woman and her doctor, you're leaving a person out. You're making a philosophical, theological, moral statement to the world that the unborn is not a person. How do you know that? What makes a company qualified to decide that that unborn person isn't a person? And why offer abortion reimbursement but not adoption reimbursement? Now, some of them do. Some of them don't. Some of them offer adoption reimbursement but keep it secret, like they don't answer the question. So, you know, what Walker's trying to do, what AFA is trying to do, what Boyer Research is trying to do is we're not trying to get these to come out and be pro-life companies. We're just trying to get these companies – Intel's a chip maker, not a policy maker.
Yeah.
Stick to that. They're very good at that. They're not very good at the theology and the moral philosophy of whether a fetus – an unborn person is actually a person. So stick to your core area of competence. Yeah. So that, you know, that's coming up. There's a lot more coming up. Yeah. We've seen a tremendous sea change that a lot of people didn't think was possible. There's a battle now. Before, there was a game every year at every company that we didn't show up for because we didn't know the game was even scheduled, and we lost by forfeit. And that's how American corporations got lost. The culture war is now in American corporate boardrooms, and we're on the field, and AFA is, as far as I know, the only Christian ministry that's out there using its shares to engage. So, you know, kudos to AFA, but where's everybody else? Mm. Where are all the other pro-life, pro-family ministries? They own shares. When are we going to hear from them?
Well, it's an exciting update, Jerry. Thank you for your incredible work. And to your point, I think AFA is doing amazing work here, but you all make a great team, and I appreciate the update today. Have a great weekend, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Same to you. God bless.
All right. That's Jerry Boyer. He's our resident economist, joins us each Friday in this segment. Let's round out the broadcast today. Quickly headed to you, Florida. Gary, you'll be our final caller. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. Me and my... soon-to-be wife have a home, and it's worth $200,000. We owe $8,000 on it, but we have a car that is $25,000 on it. But we have a second car that's all the way paid off, and it's in excellent condition. I'm an over-the-road truck driver. Would it make sense to take a loan out on the home and pay off the Camaro, or let it go and just deal with the one car?
Yeah, when you say let it go, help me with that. What do you mean?
Let the car lot have it back.
Oh, so you're unable to make the car payment every month?
We are, and there's extra money, but you know there's been issues with it, and it's a 2020 Chevrolet Camaro, and. Okay. We've had it for 3 years and still owe 25 on it, and I just don't know what to do. There's a lot going on. Should we trade down on it, or I don't know.
Yeah, got it. Before I just walked away from it, I would probably work with the dealership to see if you might be able to, you know, trade down. You might be able to sell it on a private sale basis and then just take the difference and pay on that. You know, if you can make it with one car because you're a truck driver, that'd be great. I would really explore your options there, looking at private sale, looking at communicating with the one that's holding the loan right now and the dealership, and see if you can work something out before I would just turn it in and walk away. And now all of a sudden we've got major repercussions in your credit. Of course, once you can get that mortgage paid off, now you got that payment to help apply to this, which is going to be helpful at the end of the day. But those would be the options I'd explore. Unfortunately, I'm out of time, but I'd love to talk to you further about this once you explore a few of those a bit further. God bless you, Gary. Thanks for calling today. That's going to do it for us today. A big thanks to my team today, Jim Henry, Adam Suddeth, and Robert Youngblood. Have a great day, and come back and join us on Monday. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.